The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. The newest and best team in morning sports. Brady and Lang. Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590.
Yeah.
Okay, now I know it's a baseball song. It took...
You were really busting a move during
I'm like,
that.
Are we coming back? Is this tape from the Raptors-Golden State game? Are we coming back from break? Are Jonesy and E at the post game? They got calls about Bargnani. Is that what we're doing? It's Greg Brady, Jim Lang. The Jays do open it up. No, it was good. It was good while it lasted. That song had a good run on this station.
That's got to be in rotation,
really,
Max.
I'm really... It was a good era for that particular song from 70.
You're not down with the hip hop and the rap?
Well, I didn't know it was a baseball song for the first 58 seconds. Beyond that, it was fantastic, Jim. All the enthusiasm I'm capable of faking. It was great. The Jays were 85 and 77 last season.
A surprising 85 and 77.
Yes. Baltimore was terrible. Baltimore won 66 games. Tampa Bay won 96 games. It's interesting in that I found the odds on a betting site. You can actually get to a betting site here. I used to work at a place where all the betting sites were blocked out. I don't know what happened before.
Probably because the sales staff frittered away all their
bonuses.
I don't
know what kind of trouble, whether people were playing online roulette, you know, betting on Gala curling in their spare time when they're supposed to be out getting clients to put food on all our tables. But the on WilliamHill.com, the division winners for the AL East, Boston's 8-11. So better than even odds for the Red Sox. Yankees are 7-4. Probably the first time in ages that they haven't been a prohibitive favorite. The Rays are 7-1. The Jays 16-1. And the Orioles 25-1. I don't have a problem with the Rays being ranked ahead. I think their starting pitching is more experienced. I still think their lineup, despite the loss of Carl Crawford and Carlos Pena, actually, has and more consistency to it. There's no player on the Toronto Blue Jays like Evan Longoria, right? We agree there. How could anyone argue it?
Not many teams in Major League Baseball have a player like him, do they?
And I would. There'd be an interesting prop bet if someone said Manny Ramirez will hit more home runs with Tampa than Jose Bautista would with Toronto.
Maybe take Bautista.
Yeah, you might, but you wouldn't be banking the mortgage on it.
No.
So there are sure things in life. There are absolute certainties, like CC Sabathia is going to win a certain amount of games, and Evan Longoria is going to have a certain season, and Ryan Howard's going to hit this many home runs. Toronto's got a lot of questions that are up in the air. What's the thing that most concerns you about the Blue Jays? 416-870-0590. The thing you think in the back of your head, oh God, and you almost need to take injuries aside, but that's in a way why we're bringing this up, because of what they're dealing with right now. With, I know we dealt with this last week, and Brandon Morrow is only going to miss one start. But when you have two guys that were potentially going to close out games by committee, along with John Roush, in Dotel and Francisco, who are on the DL to start the season, Brett Cecil seems to think his fastball is slower than last year. He doesn't think he knows. He wouldn't say so if he didn't. And there's guys that have to have bounce back years, and Adam Lind, Aaron Hill, and to a lesser extent, Travis Snyder. 416-870-0590, star 590. It's 416-870-0590. What's your biggest concern? What's your greatest fear about the Toronto Blue Jays this season? Because there's an awful lot of positives, Jim. We already know that. We're all looking forward to this year, and we're all looking forward to the future, but things can go wrong. They always do.
I guess at the top of my list, I'm not so concerned with Bautista. I think he's going to hit 40 to 45 home runs. I think he has that in them. My concern is Aaron Hill. Can he bounce back from last year? He hit 205. His OPS was the worst of his career, barely 665. He had decent home run power, but only 68 RBIs, where the previous year he goes 36 and 108. Now, do I think he's going to have 30-plus home runs and 100-plus RBIs? Probably not, but I think he needs to have about 80 to 85 RBIs to be productive offensively in the lineup, for the Jays to be a threat to win more than 85 games this year. And Aaron Hill is a leader in the team, and they need him to be that kind of leader.
Because I was real excited about the starting pitching based on how last season finished, based on Morrow's big game in mid-August with the 8 2/3, based on how Romero pitched down the stretch, even the little we saw of Kyle Drabek. But I guess if Romero's the closest thing to a known commodity, the closest thing you can count on, and I was actually fine with the Markham trade. I think Markham might get you a few more wins. We're hearing this cliche a lot now. The Jays might be a better team this year, but they might win less games. I'm hearing that a lot. And if people are okay with that, then they're okay with that. There's no question this team's better built than the team that was 2 seasons ago, than 3 seasons ago for the future. I will bring this up, and this may be beating a dead horse. This might be the proverbial old bit. When I saw the numbers Alex Rios put up last year for the Chicago White Sox, I just wonder. I know how we all felt about the Wells contract and how we felt about the Rios contract. I just wonder if the Rios depositing him elsewhere for basically getting nothing back was premature, whether you wouldn't want to have Alex Rios in this lineup right now. And having said that, I guess you'd have to play him in left field because Rajai Davis has too many stolen bases. He gets on base enough. They needed a leadoff man. Rios wasn't that. But what am I going to do? That's 2 years ago.
Well, Rajai Davis gives him a dimension the team hasn't had in a long time, right? I mean, that kind of speed at the top of the order. He went 5 for 5 the other day in spring training. I think he's settled into a nice groove as a hitter and with the team. And I think he gives him a nice dimension in center field and gives John Farrell a lot of options with his lineup when he's setting his batting order.
416-870-0590. We asked you, and it's on our poll question as well, who needs to have the biggest season for the Toronto Blue Jays, I should say, fan590.com. Who has the most pressure on him coming in? Pat, you're on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 at 710.
Guys, I'm worried about the bullpen.
Mm-hmm. So are we.
I think there's some injuries there that are a concern. I'm also very concerned about this Brandon Morrow and Brett Cecil, not to be worried about injuries, but could be injuries that, who knows, down the road as the season gets long, they might have to be cut short or whatever. I mean, we saw what happened with young arms with Dustin McGowan, and we just hope that it does not happen with these young arms, because if it does, it'll be a very, very long season.
Yeah. There's no help. There's no veteran help that they've just got stashed away. A few teams have that, but there's nowhere else to go other than the kids right now.
Morrow claims he's only going to miss one start, and then he's going to be back in the rotation. He'll be fine. The Cecil thing and his velocity is thing obviously something Bruce Walton and John Farrell are going to keep a close eye on, because I mean that might get into his head. It might affect his mental state when he's on the mound if he's concerned about his velocity and he's going away from his money pitch because he doesn't have confidence in his fastball. Then that could be have an effect on his ability to get guys out in the major leagues.
The team has to get on base more. They have to strike out less because, it's simply put, and maybe I've been harping on this too much, they aren't going to hit the same amount of home runs as last year. Not even close. I think it's asking too much. I don't want JP Arencibia having heat if he doesn't hit the same amount of home runs John Buck hit. That's not important to me. You want consistent catching. You want it's a kid that he has to handle kids on the pitching staff. There's not some 35-year-old starter. There's not a Kenny Rogers. There's not a Randy Johnson who's going to go, who's this kid, calling these pitches? I'm going to keep shaking him off. I'm going to be Nuke LaLoosh out there, and my head's going to rotate around like The Exorcist.
Arencibia and Romero probably tweeting each other their pitch location. They're so young. I mean, they communicate.
I would worry if they did that.
But, I mean, you're talking about two young guys who communicate in a much different way than if you're going on the mound and you're talking, say, to a 38-year-old starter who's like, go away, you're bugging me, kid.
Yeah, absolutely. 416-870-0590. What's your biggest fear about the Blue Jays this season? There is an awful lot to look forward to, and you can't not like where the young core is at. But, again, you'd rather have Brandon Morrow not on the DL to start the season. You'd rather have the two middle relievers, potential closers, not on the DL to start the season. Mark and Thornhill, you're on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Yeah, I think it's catching because you have a young catcher behind the dish. You know, first time he's thrown in there as the opening day starter. He's got to take control of these 5 starting pitchers week in and week out. And it's his job to essentially control the tone of the game. And if you have a guy that's behind the plate, and there's very few who can step right in day one and perform at a high level, he's going to be the result of a lot of wins and a lot of losses. But I also think that that is part of the excitement, seeing this kid develop and watching someone who this organization thinks is going to be an outstanding player develop. And so my biggest concern is also my biggest excitement.
Well, totally. And that's the thing. After 85, there wasn't any transition. There wasn't any, and look, we're 13 years removed. We're 17, 18 years removed, I should say, from the last time this team played meaningful games in September, let alone we're back-to-back World Series champs. But again, if the team happens to take a step back in the wins, or they have the same amount of wins, I don't think there's any pressure on John Farrell unless it's an ultimate disaster. Not many people in baseball seem to think. Everyone said to me, what do you think of the Farrell hire? All you can do is defer to the experts. You really have to at that point.
Because we have no track record.
I don't have a feel for it yet. This isn't a guy who's been somewhere else. Look, I've been dead wrong. Jim Leland came to Detroit and managed. He was a flame out in Colorado. He'd outworn his welcome in Pittsburgh, and I thought, huge mistake. I said, this is the retread of all retreads. And next thing you know, they're in the World Series. So what do I know? But with John Farrell as a young manager I'd rather have a young manager and a young team. That was often the complaint about Cito Gaston last season and the season before, though last season was a much better result than the year before.
Now, Adam Lynn is a good hitter. We all agree to that. But he's transitioning to become a full-time first baseman. And a lot of times those throws in the major leagues are rated in the money. But sometimes a guy like Junel Escobar has got to hurry, and he's picking stuff off the dirt as he's stretching to make an out, and that's where we're going to find out with all the extra work in the offseason where it paid off. Can he pick a ball out of the dirt and get an out when they need it, or is it going to be an error?
And I didn't like Encarnacion coming back. I still don't. In a weird way, I don't think this was a popular guy with his teammates. When you hear Alan Ashby hammer this guy about effort and hustle and commitment and determination, I worry about that.
That speaks volumes, does it not?
I worry tons about that, and they brought him back as a DH. Brian in Brampton, you're on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good.
My only concern for this team is support. This city needs to get behind this team. We can't ask any more of the management group. We now have to support this team.
Well, they could spend more money. I mean, I agree. And people are happy with the management group, Brian. I don't think anyone wants the structure to change. But the results still have to pour in a little bit. You can't expect people to go if they're 20 games under 500 in July.
I will say this, Brian and Greg, the Blue Jays now is the way they're constituted, the way they're set up with all the young players. I find there's more of that like 14 to 24-year-old sports fan in the GTA who are Blue Jays
yes,
fans.
And they go.
And they go and they blog and they follow them on the internet than they
Punks.
Were 10 years ago. I mean, this is not the old guy sport anymore that it was perceived to be. I mean, it still has that aura about it, but I find there's a lot more young people getting into the Jays
that were dormant, and they're
back.
They're more back than they've ever been. That's for sure. Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. More on this. Your biggest fear for the Toronto Blue Jays heading into 2011. There's the media going negative again. 416-870-0590, *590, 888-666-0590. Chan Gailey, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, later on in the hour.
Now, more of Toronto's best sports with Brady and Lang on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Team atmosphere is unbelievable this year, and it's a fun thing to have, and going forward with our quest towards the championship.
You know, I'm just excited to start the season off with the big league team. I mean, it's a great team, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Aaron Hill and Kyle Drabeck, and a much better song, 722.
Really? That much better, you think?
Did you know that was a baseball song for the first 48 seconds?
Who cares? It was a cool
song. Who cares?
Song.
Oh, you're really into the art.
Listen to this.
You're into the rap, are you?
Oh, yeah. Down with Eminem.
They are, huh?
All right. Pimping my ride. I like this.
Yeah, you don't have to, again, don't try too hard to not be like white or anything. 416-870-0590, *590. That's not makeup. That's actually your skin color. Now I've realized it. Anthony and Barry wanted to weigh in on the Blue Jays and what potentially could be their biggest fear. Anthony.
I don't really have too many fears. I agree with the caller before the break. Support. Everyone goes out and supports a team that does nothing for how many years? Over 40 years. The Jays are going to be exciting. They're young. They're building towards a championship. Everyone complains about the price to a Leaf game. Go take your kids to a Jay game. It's exciting. It's affordable. It's a great game to get the kids into.
But what? You're right. But what? When the season starts, how does that affect how the players play? How does that affect the money the team spends on the product?
Support. okay, you don't really have to spend money on players, okay? We don't need these 35-year-old has-beens that are washed up making, you know, millions of dollars. We've got a great core. We've got a great farm system. Crap, we got three top prospects in our team, okay? The support...
Who are those prospects?
Lowry, Aaron Sebia, and Snyder.
Why would Milwaukee deal Lowry to get Sean Markham? Why would they do that then?
Maybe they needed a pitcher.
Yeah, they needed a pitcher, but okay. Each their own. I like the deal. I like what we got.
You get
the fans in there. You support the team. That pushes them. That shows them that we're here for them. When the stadium's empty, what do you want them to do? They can only do so much. But I think that push from your fans supporting you, it helps out big time.
Yeah, but you know what? I concur to that to some extent. I do think we care, and you know, Anthony, you care more about the attendance numbers than the players do. The players get paid the same. They don't get paid per person coming into the venue. Of course they're going to tell you that it's more fun to play in front of 42,000 people than it is 18,000 people. And I don't deny that that's true. I'm not a big believer that impacts wins and losses. Really, I'm not.
Greg, ask the Tampa Rays. Their attendance, to me, is worse than the Blue Jays. Far worse. And
great point.
They went to the World Series a couple of years ago. With most of the regular season, there was crickets at Tropicana Field. So that didn't affect them in their wins and losses. I mean, because the players, once they're in the heat of the game, they don't really even hear or notice the crowd that much. They say it a little bit, but you're so zoned in on a pitcher who's throwing high heat in the mid-90s,
yeah,
possibly up at your head. You're so focused on that zone and that little time and space. The crowd is inconsequential sometimes.
I just don't want to get, again, we haven't even started the season, and I'm really not looking forward to 5 months of... Gee, more people have to go.
I want to see the players play. Attendance will be negligible.
And look, there will be 48,000 incredibly pleased people there, incredibly thrilled people that baseball's back on Friday. I'll be one of them. And then on Saturday and Sunday, don't panic, but there will be 20. And it's like that in many, many markets across the country, and especially in cities where we don't have to worry about NHL or NBA playoffs here. We're so lucky in Toronto in that respect. But in other cities... other teams' playoff runs will take away to the detriment of the baseball team, and they won't be there en masse until the other seasons end. Even in Boston, they'll sell out Fenway Park, but you ask people what the buzz is. Sure, the Red Sox matter, but if the Celtics and Bruins are going deep into May, you can't breathe in that town. And Celtics first. Yeah, exactly.
And I would say 85% of the teams in Major League Baseball get a significant drop-off in attendance from day two to opening day. That happens all across the major leagues.
Yeah. So I don't – again, would it be great? Do I want it more than anything in the world for 38,000 people to be there on a Friday night in September when a game matters instead of getting – you know, we had 30 some nights up until Labor Day, and then after Labor Day, you're watching on TV and you can tell there's 11 there. And I went a couple nights in September when there was 14.
It's tough.
Of course it's no fun. With Bautista chasing 50, we were 14,000. How many people were at the game when he hit 50? It was like a Thursday afternoon game against Seattle, Texas, Oakland. I can't even remember.
You mean how many people admitted they were there or how many people were actually there?
Right. Just like there's 120,000 people across the city that were at the Joe Carter home run game. I don't know if you know that.
Right. Skydome expanded. How about 250,000?
They expanded their attendance. Well, you'd be one of the people that'd be at the Barry Bonds trial if you could today. I know you wish you'd been assigned to cover it for Sports.
Don't you wish? Isn't that fascinating stuff?
It's sad. It's fascinating, but sad. Like, I read the testimony yesterday of this Kimberly Bell person, and... here's the problem. Some of this is based on, look, it's become the ultimate he said, she said. I think both these people, this is just me guessing. Barry Bonds, horrible person. Go up on a limb here. Kimberly Bell, horrible person. I think horrible people find each other at the end of the day. I think bad people find bad people sometimes. And bad people don't stay with good people too long. Tina Turner got away from Ike at some point. She just had enough. This woman had all she could handle with Barry Bonds. No doubt about it. No question about it. But it gave her a way of life she couldn't have had otherwise. So I'm not sure she's the most credible witness with the you know, he threatened to cut my head off and leave me in a ditch more than once.
All you guys lied. All of y'all.
However, her testimony, I think, stands up in court and is very damning towards Barry Bonds. I mean,
what do you mean it stands up in court? What stands up in court?
The talk about his package basically shrinking because of steroid use, his admission.
So why would he have five mistresses?
Because that's what a lot of baseball players do that.
With a shrunken package and, I would guess, a lower sexual desire.
And she testified he had to...
Why do you need more women?
Well, to prove his manhood. He had to
Is that how it works?
He had to get pharmaceutical help. And she also testified that there was wife cities and quote-unquote girlfriend cities. So cities that she could visit him in the road that were for girlfriends and other cities that were off limits because that was a wife city.
I don't know what does that mean? How does that invalidate him?
And she also testified that he complained about his elbow that he said it blew out because of steroid use.
Sure, that's the only part that can help convict him in this. The wife girl, all she's done is try and be salacious and be vulgar and be rude and try and assail his character with all the sexual stuff. I mean, beyond that, what do those prove with regard to steroids?
A lot of people believe that prolonged steroid use will reduce the size of a man's testicles.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
So, I mean, that would be part and part to him admitting that his elbow blew out because of steroid use.
Yeah, but beyond the obvious, isn't her job, her main job yesterday was to demean his character as a bad human being, a guy that would lie about anything anywhere, which, again, I don't doubt, but there's not much substance for her. I'm always really skeptical with a woman who stays with a man and then comes back later and says this man was this, that, the other thing for 6, 7, 8, 10, 20 years, and you were okay with it for that period of time. Because
you don't think there's
why.
Many women out there who stuck with bad guys for a long time?
So what's stuck with? I mean, what's that mean?
Well, because they felt they had nowhere else to go.
They didn't have any kids.
They had no choice.
What do you mean? She had every choice in the world. She had every choice in the world not to be with Barry Bonds. She knows she's not married to Barry Bonds was married with kids. She's got choices. I don't know why you're letting her off the hook. The prosecutor in this case, Bonds' defense attorney, absolutely took her apart at different points yesterday, and he had every right to. People were even saying last night, gee, I can't believe how harsh the questioning were. I can. His former mistress tries to impugn a guy who was, you know, playing the part of the good husband at the given time. Nobody bought it, and nobody should buy it. Barry Bonds is as nefarious a character as it gets. But why are we giving this woman any credibility whatsoever?
Well, wait a second.
She's road beef. That's what she is.
She deserves to have her moment in court and deserves to be heard, Greg. And I think after her testimony, I mean, I think most people in North America believe that Barry Bonds did steroids.
That was the whole point.
Oh, most people didn't believe it before she hit the testimony. Is that what you're implying?
I'm sure there were some non-believers
Now. Oh, I don't think there are any non-believers. I don't think you could find one non-believer in the Bay Area. So
in the Bay Area, they love him unconditionally. No matter what he does.
But you're proving my point. They know he did it, and they love him anyway.
But the point of this trial is to convict him for perjury, is it not?
It's absolutely. He lied to a grand jury, just like Chris Webber did.
So by her testifying about all the things that happened to him taking steroids, he is going to be on the road to be convicted for perjury, which is a serious crime in the U.S.
She's trying to write a book. She's been on the Howard Stern show talking about Barry's sexual prowess,
That doesn't mean her testimony is any less credible.
Winky. It doesn't. It doesn't make it any less credible.
Tell me who in America doesn't go on a talk show or try to write a book about everything and anything.
No, it's not the American way. I can't tell whether you're embracing this. I can't tell whether you're in part being sarcastic about it. I don't know. I'm really confused as to your validation of Kristen Bell as some kind of, you know, paragon of humility and honor. She's a scumbag, and he's a scumbag, and they happen to enjoy having sex together as a pair of scumbags for a while.
I'm not disputing that, but I'm just saying that her testimony paints him in a bad light, and I don't know how he gets out of it in this trial. And I don't know how he gets away from doing time for perjury.
No, he probably doesn't. He probably doesn't. And they did play tape yesterday of a phone call in which he told her to disappear. He didn't say he'd make her disappear. He told her to
not like not whack
to
her
disappear.
Kind of thing, yeah.
Well, no, but she's alleging that he said that in other engagements. But she happened to have this call on tape, but not the other one. Listen, this is like Mel Gibson's girlfriend. I don't doubt that she went through. Was it his wife? Who's the Russian woman?
I think it was his. Was it not his wife at one time?
I can't tell.
He's been through a few women lately.
Look, he's awful. He's an awful human being. No one's going to dispute that. But I got a real issue with the taping of phone calls and the leading on and the entrapment factor. This is like the Linda Tripp stuff with Monica Lewinsky. Surely there's a better way to go about it. Surely you've got some honor at the end of the day. But of course she doesn't, because he doesn't. Again, bad people usually end up together.
When he had threatened her, do you think she may have taped that for her own safety to cover her butt?
That's what she's saying. She doesn't have to stay with him. She doesn't have to see him. It's pretty easy to get the charges trumped up against Mel Gibson, which she's been able to do so far. It's like if there had been, if Kurt Cobain had stayed alive and he'd gotten divorced with Courtney Love, and they try and figure out who to put the kid with. I mean, Jiminy Christmas, who am I going to pick? Like, this isn't Kramer versus Kramer here. It's not Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep. I don't know. I got the heroin addict guitarist for Nirvana, and I got the heroin addict lead singer and guitarist who's writing all the songs for because she has no talent, Courtney Love. I don't know. Is there a grandfather here I can put the kid with?
I think the point here, though, is in this trial and this testimony from Kimberly Bell is setting the stage for...
That's our Kristen Bell. I feel terrible about that. That's that cute girl that was on Veronica Mars. I feel
right,
awful.
Kimberly Bell. I mean, the testimony is setting the stage for Barry Bonds to do some time for perjury in a federal court in the U.S. because of lying. And you know that from living there. That's one thing you just can't get away with.
Well, they're going to have Stan Conte... who was the trainer, no relation to Victor, Jason and Jeremy Giambi and Randy Velarde testify over the next 2 days. Well, I would watch that testimony from Jason Giambi.
Well, how about the trainer of the Giants testifying that his hat size grew during his time with the Giants?
He also said Willie Mays and Willie McCovey needed
from
larger
weight
hats.
Gain, because they were old and they gained a lot of weight. This is a young, lean, muscular guy whose hat size grew because...
That's a bit of both with Barry. The foot size is more of an indictment.
That's bizarre. A grown man in his late 30s, his feet growing.
Yeah. You guys wanted to hurt me bad enough. You finally got
Barry's
there.
Fair. Sorry about that, Barry. All right, at 7:40, Chan Gailey is going to join us from the Buffalo Bills, their head coach. After 8, we will talk to JoJo Reyes from the Blue Jays, Mitch Lawrence from the New York Daily News with the latest breaking news on Brian Colangelo, and Darcy Regeer from the Buffalo Sabres.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Win prizes. Sign up at fan590.com. Now, more of Toronto's best sports with Brady and Lang on Sportsnet Radio.
743. The Fan 590. Sorry about that, Cutler. 743, Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Time for our Fan 590 Insider.
The Sportsnet Radio Fan 590 Insider. Brought to you by J.B. Goodhue. Built for work.
And he is the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Year number 2 coming up for him. The Bills will draft 3rd overall at the NFL draft in 2011, coming up 4 weeks from Thursday. He is the Buffalo Bills head coach, Chan Gailey. Chan, it's always great to have you on the program. How are you?
Doing okay. How are you guys this morning?
Solid.
Pretty good. Who are you picking?
That was good.
Ah, no, it gets worse. Gets worse from that point on. How have you observed things? I know there's things you can say, things you can't. You've seen a lot in your NFL days, but we have been 24 years removed from the final labor dispute. As days and weeks tick on, do you get concerned that things won't get settled before you need to get a young and hopefully improving team at training camp?
I don't think concerned is the right word. I think that if it goes into middle of May, June, then you start to get anxious about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. To me, we've got a ton on our plate. We are business as usual. Evaluating last year, evaluating what we need to adjust and change, and getting ready for the draft. We get to middle of May, end of May, then you start to say, okay, now how are we going to alter our schedule to be able to get done what we need to get done? I try not to worry, but I do get anxious about things.
Now, Coach, you're scheduled to meet with Cam Newton today, and he was outstanding at the combine, showing everyone what a special athlete he is. When you and your staff meet with him today in Buffalo, are you looking at how he can sort of decipher the Bills' playbook and how he would look running the Bills' offense?
What you're trying to do is get an overall idea of whether he can handle the pro-style offense. He was in a very unique offense at Auburn. He's obviously, as you said, a great athlete. He's displayed that. We're trying to see, can he handle pro-style offense? Now, I'm not going to try to make him fit and do exactly what Ryan Fitzpatrick does. I'm not going to do that. But can he handle all that we might throw at him and that defenses would throw at him to play at this level? That's what you're trying to find out in a very limited amount of time without working with him.
Now, you've worked with athletic quarterbacks before in your career, and I think Cordell Stewart comes to mind. You see him, I'm not trying to tip your hand, but do you see a potential pro quarterback in Cam Newton?
Oh, definitely. What people don't realize is you take Cam Newton, you take Blaine Gabbert, you take Christian Ponder, you take Ryan Mallett, they have the talent to be a professional quarterback. But it's not talent. It's decision-making and accuracy. And decision-making comes from being able to decipher all that information that's going on offense and defense in 2.3 seconds. And I don't know, you can't have a meeting with a guy to determine that. You have to kind of get a feel for it to see if you think the guy can do that.
Buffalo Bills head coach Chan Gailey joining us on Greg Brady and Jim Lang here on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. You met with a group of season ticket holders last night, the lifeblood of your organization. That's how it works in Buffalo. It always has. And no doubt it's a frustrated, I'm sure, but supportive fan base. What were some of the concerns, some of the positives, some of the negatives that came out of the meeting last night that you heard fans address?
Well, the thing that happened in the event, Russ Brandon, our CEO, went up before I got up there, before Buddy got up there, and addressed the group and said, "Look, we're all frustrated. Nobody wants to go through this."
Yeah.
But it's just where we are right now, and we are appreciative of the fans that, you know, that stick there through thick and thin, and there's a bunch of them in Buffalo now. I mean, in the Buffalo Bills Nation, there's a bunch of people that are there, you know, win or lose, good or bad, thick or thin, and I think it was Russ's way of saying thanks, and we'll get through this. It may not be pretty, but we'll get through it. And then I got to come up and talk about just football and the season and things like that. So I didn't hear a lot of the other stuff. I got to hear the good stuff and the stuff I like to talk about, and that's football and organization and where I think we're going and what kind of football team I think we got a chance to have.
Jen, I know when you and your staff and Buddy Nix and the scouts get together and do your internal mock drafts, you obviously come up with different results. But this year, you don't have any free agency because of the lockout for teams to get need positions before the draft. Does it change the potential for who might be there waiting for you at number 3 overall?
Yes, it has. The dynamics of this draft will be different if there's no free agency before the draft. I guess one of my worst fears, Buddy and I haven't even talked about this, but one of my worst fears would be the judge hears the first part of this deal on April the 6th. Well, if she says, okay, April 23rd, you know, okay, y'all handle it, go back to 2010 rules and free agency's up and going. My goodness. You're talking about a free-for-all 4 days before the draft. You know, that could just be an amazing turn of events. So we are prepared. Buddy, the one good thing about it is Buddy's prepared when free agency does hit. We've targeted guys in our mind. We've got to go make contact and see what we can do with them. But if it's after the draft, it does. This draft takes on a different look, really.
And you must have been disappointed from a strategic perspective, Chan, that Andrew Luck didn't come out from Stanford, only in the sense that if he goes to Carolina or whoever the number one pick is, if he ended up being consensus number one, then you've got one extra option that you won't have this year. And I know as a senior, when he comes out, you don't plan to be picking this low again. That's never the plan.
Right.
So you have no business. It doesn't really matter who he goes to as long as it's not the Dolphins or not the Jets or a team like that.
Yeah, he needs to stay on the West Coast.
Yeah, right. See him one time every 4 years, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And again, hey, you can gripe about what you don't have or get excited about what you do have. And there's some good guys, you know, that are out and available, and there's going to be – I know everybody talks about the number 3 pick. What excites me is we're going to get 4 players in the top 100. And to me, that's even better.
You know, Chan, looking at the number three pick, and you talk about those picks in the couple 100, stopping the run was a big problem for your team. Quarterback or no quarterback, there's also an opportunity in the first couple rounds for the Bills to really shore up the run defense. And there's that great kid from Alabama, Marcel Darius, near the top of the draft pick as well.
Yeah. There's several good defensive players, defensive linemen, linebackers. There's more probably depth at those two positions than there's been in a while. So we like that option for our football team, because you know, everybody talks about quarterback, and that's the position everybody wants and needs, and you know, everybody wants Peyton Manning. You know, that's what everybody wants. And But you look at the great teams, and they've got good defense, and that's one thing we're going to try to do is get our defense back where it belongs.
Before you go, I'm dying to ask you about preseason and the four games, only in the sense that as an evaluator of talent, can you do your job with less preseason games? I've had head coaches, position coaches tell me before, they get as much from seeing the workouts and seeing the intra-squad stuff than they do from the four preseason games. Having two wouldn't make your job any harder in terms of deciding who to take into the regular season and who not to. Would you buy into that analysis?
I would not buy into that.
You want the four games.
I want the four games. I think I can practice and scrimmage all you want, but when the lights are on and the people mm-hmm. in their stands, and he knows that he's being evaluated with every step he takes, I think that pressure is something that a guy needs for us to be able to determine whether he can get the job done or not.
Chan's, great pleasure having you on the show. Best of luck leading up to the first round of the NFL draft. And obviously, we hope there's better labor news on the front before then. Thanks for checking in with us.
All right, guys. Always great to be with you.
There's
Thanks, Coach.
Chan Gailey, head coach of the Buffalo Bills, who will draft behind the Carolina Panthers, behind the Denver Broncos. And the luck thing is intriguing. They would have ended up getting a better player, because that's where Carolina was going. And I love the people that say, oh, they took Jimmy Clausen. Jimmy Clausen might even understand himself that you got to be as good as you possibly can be at that position. You can be, you know, you can kind of cheap out at some of the other positions. It's the quarterbacks that end up winning playoff games. It really is. There's a reason Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and guys like this go deep into the playoffs.
And here's what doesn't help Jimmy Clausen. Ron Rivera is a new head coach. He has no ties whatsoever to Jimmy Clausen. Ron Rivera...
No, but they have huge financial ties.
They have financials, but Ron Rivera has no inclination to start this guy whatsoever. He's going to put whoever he thinks a quarterback can help them win. Jimmy Clausen might make big money, but he could be on the sideline most of the season if Rivera has his way.
Yeah. By the way, we're giving away, as you know, tickets to Charlie Sheen's show at Massey Hall on a regular basis. This could be quite intriguing. He's here April 13th and April 14th and 15th. He's having trouble getting hotel rooms in other cities.
Really?
Well, come on.
They won't book them? All
if you're, if you're running, and I expect you will be, or I will be in a few years, at the front desk of a hotel, or you're on the reservation phone. Yeah, we need 8 rooms. Really? Oh, is this a
party.
Convention? Is this an auto dealer's group? Is this right. An Avon group? No, it's the Charlie Sheen entourage. We need 8
Click.
Rooms. Like, he's done some damage in some of these places. This would be like booking The Who back in 1965. Or, you know, we need 1 room for Robert Plant, 1 for Jimmy Page, and 1 for a giant tub of Mars bars. I hope that's okay.
And John Bonham's riding a motorcycle in the hallway. Keith Moon just threw a TV out the 8-4 window.
Like, I know he's welcome to stay with our boss, Don Collins.
But Don basically...
Charlie could take the go in.
Right.
Go back with him at night.
Have breakfast with the girls.
Right. You know, go over some show tape from the Sportsnet Radio Fan
Didn't like that
590s
break,
programming
Charlie,
day.
Know.
Yeah, it's very possible. A source close to Sheen in the New York Post says, the real issue is finding him a hotel that allows smoking. He has to be able to smoke. Yeah, I know the feeling. I really do.
What about a balcony? Can he get on a balcony?
Well, you don't want him jumping off the balcony. Somebody can fall off, right?
Because he's a little unstable.
Like, we need more dead prostitutes in this city. I'm being dead serious. And it's hard to find a place that will accommodate him. Plus, his entourage, there will be more than 30, including the lighting people and, of course, the goddesses. You're probably a big fan of the goddesses. I don't find the goddesses particularly...
The goddesses really aren't doing much for me.
I'm glad you said that.
They're
if you found them remarkably attractive.
The goddesses, they're too rough. They're too nasty.
I'm glad at least there's a line with you in terms of attractiveness.
There is. There really is.
Yeah. Once you get into that adult film realm,
that's
rough
wrong.
Stuff happens, and yeah.
Now you don't even go there.
I was double and triple checking, so who knows? Maybe he's down the street at the Marriott.
What a couple of trolls.
Maybe he's at Harvey's in Jarvis.
That's a good place, actually. I've seen guys slumped over there before, waiting for the place to open until they can get a milkshake. 7:56. After 8 o'clock, much more esteemed guests like Gord Stellick and Mitch Lawrence and Darcy Regier will be on the program.